Hello, everyone. Oh, I forgot my watch. It's too bad. Yeah. I can't keep her running. Okay, there we go. Oh, thank you. I have one. You're very kind. Thank you. I have it right here on my wall. You're very kind. Thank you. Hi, everyone. It's nice to see you here, smiling faces. Sometimes just before I'm going to give a little presentation, I wonder what I'm doing here. Did you ever look up from some moment in just look up from some sliver of time and wonder, what am I doing here? Sometimes I wonder that. Not clear what I'm doing here. In the sense that, in my case, it seems that some people feel I've had an unusual experience. And in my life, I experienced that I did not have an unusual experience, but something that was quite normal. So it's always a bit unusual for me to think that other people imagine that it's unusual that I had a normal experience. Because does that make any sense? Did what I just said make any sense at all? And so I'm glad you're here, because I do want to share with you the experience that I had. But most of all, I hope today that we'll be able to prove that it's not an unusual experience, but rather really quite a normal experience, an experience that's haveable, if I could coin a word, an experience that's haveable by anyone and everyone, and in fact an experience that everyone is having. They're simply calling it something else. At the beginning and at the end of my presentations, I like to create parentheses of poetry, because I sometimes tend to talk in left brain kinds of energies, and I like the right brain energy of poetry. And so I asked my wife, who is a working poet, whose poetry is published in audio and written form, to share her poetry with us as a means of getting us from our left brain into our right brain, or starting us off there. So having said that, I'm going to ask Em if she would come up and just open today with a little bit of her poetry. She'll say her poem twice, the first time for your mind, the second time for your heart. I find that when I hear anybody give poetry the first time, I'm usually sitting there trying to figure out, what was that? What did they say? I don't understand. What did that mean? Didn't even rhyme. Wait a minute, just a second. And then the second time I hear it, I just relax into it and let myself just receive it. And then I take from it whatever I do. So having said that, I'd like to ask Em if she would be just willing to open this time with a little bit of poem. This is my wife, Em Claire. And, you know, after the poem is done I'd like to ask you to refrain from applause. Thank you for that applause just now, so that we can just sit with it for just a second, because if we applaud, then it kind of cracks the air with a whole different energy, and we lose the whole point of starting with poetry. So it's okay if you do not applaud when M is finished. On the other hand, when I am finished,
it's all right, my God, that we court like this, as perfectly planned as fireflies and twilight at the blended edge of summer's night. By the time I turn to look at you from beneath this blushing skin, you have already sent an angel's breath from some new heaven within. Oh, beloved within me, I do love thee, but it is to me I whisper. And to the all of life that gathers in that name, oh, it is this kiss I bid divinity claim. It's all right, my God, that we court like this, as perfectly planned as fireflies and twilight at the blended edge of summer's night. By the time I turn to look at you from beneath this blushing skin, you have already sent an angel's breath from some new heaven within. Oh, beloved within me, I do love thee, but it is to me I whisper, and to the all of life that gathers in that name, oh, it is this kiss I bid divinity claim.
We are each of us involved in an extraordinary adventure called life. And in some ways it feels like a mystery, and in some other ways it feels, at least to me, to be perfectly clear. But it has never felt easy for me until most recently. And so I have been spending the days and times of my most recent years chatting with people in groups like this all over the place to share with them some fundamental truths that I have encountered and learned in my days upon the earth. And they include awarenesses that have changed my life. Not that I'm suddenly, you know, living perfectly or without difficulty or challenge, but that I experience life in an entirely different way. And I surely experience my relationships with other people in an entirely different way. And I experience the world in an entirely different way. And I think that the reason that I travel all over the place to share this information is because I have this notion that the world would be a remarkably different place if all of us shared the experience that I have had. And I realized that really all of us are sharing the experience that I have had, but we're calling it something else. And so the effort that I am extending is to see if there's some way we can all call it the same thing, recognize it as the same thing, because if we do, then we will begin to recognize each other as the same thing, and our experience of each other on this earth will change dramatically. So we're sitting here today. This is a very short time for us, about an hour and a half, and that's not a a lot of time for me. I'm used to more long-form kinds of programs, 2-3 hours, 5 hours, or even, for that matter, 5-day programs that I do everywhere. So when they tell me I have 90 minutes, it feels like, you know, 90 minutes to explain life. And it feels like a real challenge. And I'm talking about a topic today that's pretty large. I look on the program of events like this, my lovely friends, all of whom I know, many of whom I know, the other presenters here, talk about the power of attraction and the positive thinking and, you know, getting your life together and how to reduce, you know, pain, emotional and physical pain in your life, and how to become more abundant, and how to talk to disembodied, you know, spirits from the beyond, and how to reach into the past, and how to contact dearly departed loved ones, and all of those wonderful juicy topics, and they're all great. It's all a lot of fun, and I'm here to talking about the scariest creature of all time, God. Who's not really the scariest creature of all time, but certainly has been painted that way for a long time. So for this next hour and a half, we're going to talk about an experience, unless we don't, this thing that some of us call God. And I have a mission, which is to change the world's mind about God and to change the world's idea of who and what God is and who and what life is and who and what we are. And what this is all about anyway, this whole process that we're going through. What in the world are we doing here? What is up? What's happening? What's the point of it all? Somebody tell me. And why is the world the way it is? And why is life the way it is? And if there was some way I could change it, what way would that be? And is there any way to connect on a personal level? Is there any way for any of us to individually connect with this thing that some of us call God, Allah, Brahman, Yahweh, Jehovah, Krishna, or by whatever other name it pleases us to refer to this ineffable essence, this stuff of life, the essential energy that we've given these various names? And what is it that God wants anyway, and what are we supposedly up to here on the earth? I can tell you, as I said to the group that was with me yesterday, what life is not about. It is not about get the guy, get the car, get the girl, get the job, get the house, get the promotion, get the office in the corner, get the kids, get the grandkids, get the gray hair, get the sickness, and get the hell out. There is something more going on, it seems to me, than that. There is a great deal more going on than that. And what I was told in my... How many of you have read one or more of my... I should start right there. How many of you read one or more of my books? Yeah, okay, so I was afraid of that. So maybe it's like I shouldn't say anything up here because I have nothing new to tell you. Nothing. You already know every move I'm going to make, everything that I have that I could possibly say. I feel a bit like Madonna's next husband on his wedding night. I mean, I know what it is that I want to do. I'm just not certain that I can make it interesting. But like him, I'm going to try. If you've read my books, you know that I had an experience that I believe we all have. And the first thing I learned from this experience that I chose to call a conversation with God is that we are all having conversations with God all the time. We're simply calling it something else. And today I hope we'll have a chance to prove that to you with a little process that we're going to do here in about an hour or so. A little bit less, perhaps, in which we'll give you all an opportunity to have your own conversation with God. In order to have this process work, you all will need something to write on. I don't know if anyone told you that, but if they didn't, it's a huge mistake. So if you have, how many of you do not have something to write on? Okay, well, that's just a few of you. So maybe we can find a way to get you something to write on. Okay, if you don't have anything to write on, raise your hand. We have assistants who are going to give you... Well, maybe a friend will give you a pen or something. Do you have any pens by any chance? Great. We actually have pens as well. Hey, this is great. The room is well supplied. Thank you. Okay, we're all settled in then. Raise your hand if you need some help. Ma'am? There. Thank you. So here's what I know. People on the planet are living lives in ways that they were not intended to be lived. We're living lives that for so many of us are difficult and challenging and sad and upsetting and disappointing. And we all have happy times too, that's true. We all have our joys and our happiness, that is correct. But way, way, way too much of our times, way too many of our moments are not happy, are rife with at least challenge, if not tragedy or sadness. We have aspects of our lives we don't understand. We become frustrated, we become angry, we become resentful. We become sometimes furious, we become puzzled, we become confused. We become upset, we become disappointed. We have lots of negative emotions that we're dealing with, and because of all of this stuff that's going on, we have wars and conflict and violence in our homes and between our countries, from nation to nation, from person to person, and most tragically of all, even from religion to religion, from culture to culture. All of this is going on. Excuse me if you're in the front of the room, I'll come right back, but I just like to say hello sometimes to some of the people near the back of the room. Glad you guys are here. Nice to see you. Thanks for coming. And what I know about this life that we're all living is that it doesn't have to be that way. I wrote a book a couple of years ago called Happier Than God, and what I was told in that book is that life was meant to be happy most of the time, if not all of the time. We were not meant, of course, to have wars, to have violence, to have conflict, to have difficulty, to have these kinds of challenges and these experiences of deep sadness, to say nothing of hurting each other, which we do so often on the earth. And the reason I am told that we have these challenges and these problems is that we simply don't understand what's going on, what's really going on. It's not our fault. It's not our fault that we don't understand. We've gotten different messages everywhere we turn. Our schools tell us something. Our universities tell us things. Our religions tell us all different things. The philosophies of the world's great writers. We have as many answers to life's questions as you could imagine, and not all the answers even match. So we're trying to pin it together, trying to hook it together. And the latest version of that, at least in some quarters, is what is called the New Thought or the New Age movement. We're all, I suppose, nominally part of that. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here in the room. So we're all part of the New Age crazies. A movement, New Age movement. The latest wave. As humanity seeks to get answers to the simplest questions. You know, here, think about this. There are 6 billion plus, now they say 6.5, pretty close to 6.5 billion people on the planet, all wanting essentially the same thing. We want peace. We want security. We want harmony. We want love. We want joy. We want happiness. Even those people labeled terrorists, when you talk to them one-on-one, even they will tell you that. distorted as their solutions might be, twisted as their ideas about how to get there might be, they're all trying to get to the same place. Peace, happiness, harmony, security. How is it possible for 6.5 billion people to want the same thing and us not be able to get it? I mean, consider the question. How is it possible for 6.5 billion sentient beings who call themselves evolved to want the self-same thing and be singularly unable to create it after thousands and thousands of years? Is it possible that there's something we don't fully understand here, the understanding of which would change everything? And I'm suggesting to you here today that the answer is yes. And I'm suggesting to you here today, I don't want to get too serious now, and this isn't a serious political science lecture or any of that, but I don't want to get real heavy, but I do want to say that I think the answer is that we don't understand the responses, we don't understand the answers to the four major questions of life. And God, forgive me for putting it this way, but God said to me, in one of my many conversations, Neil, it's really very simple. There are four questions in life, and most people have never asked them, much less answered them. Here they are. Question number one, who am I? I mean, who am I really? Question number two, where am I? I mean, where is this place? Where am I? What is this place called the Earth or the Milky Way or the solar system? Where am I? Where in the world am I? Question number three, why am I where I am? You know, what am I doing here? What's the point? God has blessed you. Or question number four, finally, question number four, what do I intend to do about that? When you get the answer to the first three questions, what do I intend to do here? What do I intend to do about all of that? We've tried to get answers to those questions, but those of us who have actually asked them, but that's a small number relative to the overall number of people on the earth. A lot of people don't even have time to stop to ask questions like this. They're just trying to get through the day, simply trying to get enough food to survive. To sit down and consider philosophical questions like this is left to people like us who have the luxury of doing such a thing. And so the questions do not get asked and they do not get answered. At no point in my education did anybody pose those four questions. Gotta get it. I went to parochial elementary school, Catholic elementary school. Nobody ever asked these four questions. I went to college, to a very nice university. No professor ever asked me these questions. The questions have not been posed to me by my parents, by anyone. Nobody ever said, wait, stop the show just a minute. Let's just look at some fundamental stuff here. Who are we? Where are we? Why are we where we are? And what the heck are we doing here? And what do we intend to do? So I want to share with you some answers that I received to those questions from the For What It's Worth department. I could be as wrong as everybody else, but just to put some new ideas into the space and then move us into an opportunity to experience and to express some of the answers to those questions. So the first question is, who are we? I got to tell you that I've been asking myself that question since I was 7 or 8 years old. And when I was 16, I finally had the answer. I realized at 16 that I am my hair. No, seriously, I knew that I was my hair because I could tell how people were thinking about me. All my friends and everybody, you know, in school had thoughts about me based on, you know, how my hair was. And I'd spend hours in front of the mirror making sure that my hair turned out exactly right. You know, and if it didn't turn out exactly right, I would throw the comb into the sink and refuse to be seen in public. Actually, not much has changed through the years. But when I turned 18, I realized how silly this was. Of course, I'm not my hair. I got clear about that. What a silly thought, I'm my hair. At 18, I knew the truth. I'm my car. And I knew that I was my car because I could feel how, you know, the other kids were thinking about me based on the car that I was driving, you know. And one night my car wasn't working for some reason. I had a big date. My father felt bad about it. He reached into his pocket. He threw me his keys. Here, kid, take my car. I said, you kidding me? I wouldn't be caught dead in your car. My father drove an Oldsmobile. Today I drive an Oldsmobile. And the sins of the father shall be visited upon the sons even unto the seventh generation. No, actually, the truth is I sold my Oldsmobile a couple of years ago out of sheer embarrassment. But when I turned 21, I realized, isn't that silly how you try to identify, you try to figure out, you know, get some sense of self. I'm my hair, I'm my car. How silly at 21, I knew the truth. I am my women. And I have to tell you that I played the game called I Am My Women for a very long time. It was a delicious game to play. And I could tell that I was my women because the way the world was responding to me based on who was or who was not on my arm. But after about 20 years or so of playing the game called I Am My Women, I realized that's silly. Of course, I'm not my women. Because if I am my women, I must have multiple personality disorder. Because there were so many of them. Well, anyway, the point is that I got clear that that's not who I was, but still the search went on, the search went on, the search for identity. Who am I? Who am I? And then I realized, of course, in my mid to late 40s, it finally dawned on me, and I came to the conclusion that all young men in their 40s come to at one time or another, and my father said the kid's finally grown up, because my conclusion was, I am my, of course, my job, my career, of course. How come only the women in the audience? Did you notice that only female voices, for the most part? Yes, it's true. And I played the game called I Am My Job big time. I used to walk around saying things to my wife like, you'll have to understand, this is my job. This is what I do. This is my work. And then the coup de grace, you knew this when you married me. But then I realized, too, with startling clarity, one morning, I woke up, looked in the mirror, and I said, wait a minute, I can't be my job. I've been fired 7 times. So who am I? Who am I? Just who am I? And then I came home, and I realized, oh, I got it. Now I know who I am. It dawned on me, and my mother said, he really has grown up, because I came to the conclusion that I am my wife and my family. Yes, that's it. I'm my family. And so I went to a job I hated for years, by the way, not for a couple of months. Went to a job I really didn't feel all that excited about, but it was a living. Because I was making a living and bringing home the bacon for my family. And that's what guys do, and women too these days. That's what we do. Doesn't matter whether we're happy there or makes sense to our soul, that's what we do. We have to survive. All for the family. And then I came home one day, and I opened the door to my house, and the house was empty. Not just of people, but of furniture. Now, you know something's amiss when there's no furniture in the house. And I recall the moment vividly. This is a true story, by the way. I'm not making this up. This is true. And I recall the moment, of course, because it's unusual. I opened the door. My God, we've been robbed. But that's crazy because nobody comes into your house in the middle of the day and takes out all the furniture, so obviously. And then I realized that not all the furniture was gone. Back in the corner was the lamp that I had been lugging around with me from college, you know. And over there was my hi-fi set that I've had for as long as they were called hi-fi sets. It's a long time ago. And in fact, all of my things, the few things that I... No, she couldn't have. She wouldn't have. I raced upstairs to the master bedroom, threw open her side of the closet. All of her clothes were gone. Threw open my side of the closet. All of my clothes were still there. That's when I knew the awful truth. The robber was a woman. It's amazing what the mind will do to stop you from looking at what's right in front of your face. But I couldn't not look at it anymore. So I sat down on the couch in the nearly empty living room. "What do you want from me?" I cried. "To no one in particular." "What do you want from me?" "I don't know how to play here. I can't be that bad that people run away from me in the middle of the day and move the furniture out." I never raised a hand to her in anger. Would never hit anybody in anger. I'd raise my voice once in a while, but we all do that now and then, right, guys? Right, guys? Okay, so I'm the only one who does that too. Somebody give me the rules.
"I'll play, just give me the rules. I swear to God, I'll play, just give me the rules. And don't change them."
And I didn't get the rules. I didn't get the information for nearly 15 more years. I hung out just trying to make it work, slugging it out, slogging through day after day. What is the point of all of this? Somebody tell me, because I don't get it. And I wound up finally living on the street. As some of you may know if you saw the movie that they made of my life. I wound up living as a street person, and not for a week or two, or even a month or so, but for a whole year. No money at all. I didn't have two nickels. Literally did not have two nickels. Every morning, heading out onto the sidewalk. Every day, walking the streets. "Do you have any spare?" "Just a quarter. A dime. Any spare?" I can't tell you how debilitating that is. I don't even have words to tell you that story. And that's when I was brought to my knees by life, after a year on the street, eating out of trash bins. I said, "Okay, God, you know, either you tell me something now, or I'm out of here. I'm out of here." And God was sore afraid. "Oh my God, a world without Neil. Somebody do something." He ran to all the angels. "Go down and talk to them." And the angel's like, "Not me. You handle this one." So she did. She paid me a wonderful visit, and he said to me in that visit, "Do you really want answers to all of these questions? Or are you just venting?" I said, "You know, I am venting, but if you got answers, I'd sure as hell like to know what they are." And I was given then answers to all the questions I'd ever asked and answers to questions I didn't know existed. And here is what I was told. Through 9 books and 3,000 pages of dialogue, which I happened to write down. I need to tell you just quickly, I did not write those books, not the first 3, as books. That is, I'd never thought, dreamt, or imagined that they'd ever see print. I was writing on a yellow legal pad. It was like journaling, just private diary stuff. Never, ever dreamt that anyone would ever see it. After book 3, it's fair. From book 4 on, of course, I knew they'd be published because the first 3 had been the many yellow legal pads. They divided it up into what they called book 1, book 2, and book 3. But it didn't start out that way. How could I imagine? So I'm just having this internal dialogue. This internal dialogue. In which I'm asking and getting answers. And I'm told some astonishing things. Number one, everybody is having a conversation with God all the time. They're just calling it something else. Number two, there's no disconnection between you and anything else that you would call God. God does not exist somewhere separate from you. It is, in fact, that which is in you, living as you. Or to put it in simple, direct terms, you are God. You are the manifestation of divinity, the individuation of God. Not new information for people in this room, I know, old stuff for us here, but out there still revolutionary, out there still a revolutionary, if not a blasphemous thought that you and God are one. And so the answer to the first question I was given, who am I? Dare I say it? I am God? I am in a singularization of the singularity? So I had to practice embracing that. I had to practice owning that. I am that which God is. I am divine. As is everyone in the world. Everyone. Not just the heroes, but the villains too. I couldn't wrap my mind around that. How could some of the world's worst despots be God? Or for that matter, how could even I, a mini despot, with all that I've done to mistreat others and myself, how could I be divine? And God said, because you simply have forgotten. You've forgotten who you really are. And you're forgetting has not been by accident, but in fact has been intentional. Part of the process, and here's what's going on. Forgive me for those of you who were here yesterday, I'll do this very quickly. There's a figure eight in the air, a figure eight in the air on its side. Not coincidentally, the international symbol for in infinity. Here is the realm of spirituality. Here, in this loop of the figure eight, is the realm of physicality. Spirituality, physicality. The essence of who you are is on an eternal journey, I was told, from the realm of the spiritual to the realm of the physical. Back to the realm of the spiritual, back to the realm of the physical. Why? Why, I said. Okay, where am I now? In the realm of the physical. Answer to question number two. You are in the realm of the physical. Or, if you please, the realm of experience, because the realm of the spiritual is the realm of knowing. This is where you know everything absolutely, because everything exists in absolute form. Here, you are absolutely what you are, absolute divinity. It is always here, it is always now, you are always the word we use in our language, love. Or divine, or God, or Allah, or Brahman, or Yahweh, or Jehovah, or whatever word it pleases you to use to define that essence, that pure energy that is all that is. But here it is known absolutely. And so it created the realm of the physical, which you could also call, if you please, the realm of relativity. The realm of the absolute, the realm of the relative. The realm of the absolute, the realm of the relative. Traveling from the absolute, where we know and experience and understand ourselves as who we fully are, and the realm of the relative, where we can express that in relative terms. And so it turns out that the answer to the third question, why are we where we are, is because only in the realm of the relative can we do what we intend to do. Only in the realm of the relative can that which is God do what it intends to do, chooses to do. What is that? You ask. And the answer is the same for God the collective as it is for God the individuated. It's the same answer. Know itself. In our own experience. And so it turns out that we are choosing to know ourselves as who we really are. We are seeking and choosing to express and to experience, to announce and to declare, to become and to fulfill who we really are, which is divinity itself. The purpose of life, then, is to know yourself as divine, that God, the collective, might know itself as divine even through you. And we do it in multiple lifetimes, I'm told, an endless number of lifetimes with forgiveness, or with my asking forgiveness, for those of you who don't believe in reincarnation, which I believe is probably three of you in the room. We do it in repeated lifetimes over and over and over again because we need an infinite number of lifetimes to express the infinite number of qualities of divinity, which are infinite. And that each time through the cycle, if you please, we come with a different agenda. It could be one or more than one objectives. This time, clearly, my agenda is to learn, I'm clear now, patience and humility. I've not done that great of a job, but that's what I've come here to experience and to express. Those aspects of divinity. Ultimately, we come through the cycle enough times that we have experienced a great deal of what it means to be divine, and we start showing up that way in physical life. Others call us avatars, masters, gurus, and the like. And even before we reach that stage, we become very revered people, holy people, if you please, the Mother Teresa's of the world, the Gandhis of the world, the Martin Luther Kings of the world, the extraordinary people of the world who show up in the world in extraordinary ways because so much has been accumulated through their times, through the cycle. And they bring so much to each additional lifetime, and they're very, very, very close to completing the mission. However, the mission, I'm told, is never really complete, because even when you complete the mission, even if you should understand and experience all of it in that very moment, God will create an expansion of what divinity is, because God has no intention of this process ever coming to an end. And so we are, I'm told, part of a divine process through which we experience divinity itself flowing in us, through us, as us, but we don't understand this, much less even what divinity is, and so we see each other as something other than that. Do you know, my lovely friends, it's easier for us to think of ourselves as the devil than as divine. Or, to put it more gently, it's easier for us to think of ourselves as evil than as ultimately good. Until we turn our thinking around. Until we become the personification of who we really are. And we do this and can do this with the help of the collective divinity, which we have chosen to call, in this particular language, God. And that collective wishes us all to know that it is available, the collective wisdom, the collective divinity, the collective love is available to all of us as a direct experience. And that we can connect with that divinity and with that experience and with that wisdom. We can connect with it at any time that we wish. Religion is humanity's attempt to do that. Sadly, religion has done, in many cases, exactly the opposite. The very human institution that was designed to bring us closer to God has, in fact, in too many cases, pushed us further away from that which we call God by creating a demanding, punishing, condemning, intolerant God who says there's only one way to get to me, only one path, and you better come to me by that path and no other path. Oh, and by the way, I'm not going to tell you what the path is. I'll let you create 237 known religions with 237 holy scriptures, and it'll be like pick a card, any card. But if you pick the wrong card, you're going straight to hell. But it's not a problem because we do not give ourselves permission to pick the wrong card. We've got the right card. We all know we've got the right card. It's all there in the book. It's all there in the book. And you know what book I'm talking about, of course, the Upanishads. I'm sorry. I mean it's in the Quran. No. It's in the Talmud. It's in the Bhagavad Gita. It's in the Book of Mormon. It's in the Bible. It's in one of those books, I think. Maybe it's in Conversations with God. Ooh. The question I'm asked more than any other question wherever I go is, well, there are two questions really. Number one, did you really have a conversation with God, or is it just something you kind of say? It's okay. It's a way to get an audience, but tell me true. Tell me true. Did you really have a conversation with God? The answer is yes. That's been my direct experience. And my direct experience is that conversation continues to this very day. The second question I get asked more than any other question is, how can I do that? How can I do that? We're going to demonstrate that here today. There are several steps you can take. Step number one, you must first believe that there is a thing called God. How many of you believe that there is a thing called God? That's almost 100% of you. Maybe a few, just a handful of you that did not raise your hand. You will be escorted from the room. So step number one, you must, of course, believe there is a thing called God. I'm trying very quickly, we just have an hour and a half here, trying very quickly to define for you what God is. Obviously, philosophers and theologians have been trying to define God from the beginning of time. My definition, in simple terms, is the all of it, the everything. Life itself, if you please, that the words God and life are interchangeable. Therefore, if you're part of life, you're part of God. And if God is God, then God is part of life, and life and God are the same words, are the same things with interchangeable labels. So if you are that which lives, then you are that which is God. That life is God made physical, if you will. So you must believe in God. And you must hold the idea that God the collective, if I could put it that way, that God the collective, the sum total of all the individuations, has a wisdom and an insight and a power that can be focused and used intuitively, intentionally, and immediately. Step number two. You must believe that God actually talks, that is God the collective, actually talks to the individuations, to people, that God speaks directly to human beings. Not indirectly, like a glorious sunrise with angels singing in the sky, but in fact directly to you, and to you all the time. You must believe that God speaks individually, specifically, and directly to human beings. That's not a small thing to believe. It's interesting, by the way, that most people who are adherents or members of a particular religion do believe that, because almost all of the world's great religions have been created around the teachings of a person who they claim spoke directly to God. Ever notice that? That's true of all the world's great religions. Moses, Muhammad, Jesus, Baha'u'llah. There's a prophet or a person to whom God gave a direct revelation, and that revelation has been passed on to others who created a religion, excuse me, a religion surrounding that person. So there's not too much controversy about the fact that God speaks directly to human beings. It's just the thought that God stopped doing that several hundred or several thousand years ago. Doesn't do it anymore, because in the intervening time, God developed a case of celestial laryngitis. So now God doesn't talk to us anymore. But in fact, you must believe that that is a piece of false information, that God speaks directly right now, even as God did then. Third step, you must embrace the notion that not only does God speak to human beings, but that God speaks to you. I mean specifically to you. Every day. And therefore, you must be willing to toss out our previously used labels for such a phenomena: women's intuition, serendipity, a moment of inspiration, creativity, coincidence, or whatever other word you have used to allow yourself to become socially acceptable. Because who wants to walk around saying, God spoke to me this morning? See, God talks to me all the time. So you must be willing to embrace the notion that God speaks directly to you, and has done so throughout your life, and is doing so even on this day, in a variety of ways, through the lyrics of the next song you hear on the radio, the chance utterance of a friend on the street, the billboard that just happens to be around the next corner that you turn with just the right message, the magazine you pick up at the hairdresser, or some weird guy sitting in front of the room talking to you right now. To say nothing of an actual voice or words or ideas that occur to you singularly in the privacy of your own mind that speak to you of wisdom and truth and light and love every moment of every day. Let those who have ears to hear listen. The next step, after hearing that or seeing or receiving that communication, we must not disavow it, deny it, set it aside and call it, oh, coincidence, or you just made that up, or that's just my imagination. But in fact, stop denying the messages you're receiving, which is what I did for most of my life. Deny, 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 woo-woo stuff. God doesn't talk to her. Okay, yeah, I got it. Yeah, that's true. It did happen that way, but that was a coincidence. Or whatever way I could write it off. So we have to stop denying it. And then the final step, to step into the living of and the doing of the message we receive. That is to actually walk the talk that we have heard, or take the message we've received and turn it into real life action. I'm running through these very quickly. In my long form retreats, we do a process around each one of these steps. And it's a wonderful experience for everybody in the room. But it's not necessary to do those processes. And I'm going to assume that almost everyone in this room has already, in one way or another, walked through those steps already. And many of you are already receiving conversations with God. I know that because I've gotten letters from you and heard from you. And you've told me so. So I understand this is may not be new to you. And yet I think that if humanity can develop the ability to have this ongoing conversation with God as a regular part of our daily life, it would change our lives forever. And we would no longer live the kind of life that I described earlier when I was walking around the room. Life of sadness and sorrow, of pain and suffering, of anger and of violence even around the world. That things would change. So we'll see if that could be true in the years ahead as more and more people begin to understand their direct connection with the divine. Before I step into this process with you, I want to ask the room if there's any question that any of you may have about anything that I've said so far, or anything that the Conversations with God books have brought to your mind that you do question. Yes, ma'am.
When you were talking about the masters and how they kind of come through the life cycles and they show up in life the way they do, But then you said that we forget that who we are. So how do they, you know, if we forget in a lifetime who we are, and our job is to kind of remember that, then how do these masters show up with all this knowledge and this way about them, the way they show up?
I believe that they've been opened. Something in life, in this life, in their present lifetime, has opened them to that reservoir of cellular memory that they carry with them from one lifetime to the next.
Is that the soul data?
I beg your pardon?
Is that the soul data?
The data of the soul, yeah.
Data of the soul.
And I think that something has occurred in their life, whatever it might be. It could be nothing more than earnest prayer. Some people get there by just earnest, what I call earnest prayer, or deep meditation. Other people get there by some huge tragedy or some striking moment in their life. In Eckhart Tolle's case, he calls it kind of a bolt of lightning, just a bolt of lightning experience. Byron Katie had the same kind of a experience where just one day they just got it. So I think it's a process that's different for every person, but somehow or another, by some means or another, people sometimes step through that doorway and nothing is the same ever again. They just get it. And all the memories, if you please, come flooding back. And they suddenly not only know, but they know that they know.
I think I've had that just like brief little
times. Many people
like
have had
yesterday.
Brief glitches. Yes. How many of you, having heard me just describe this, how many of you would fairly say that you've had moments exactly like that, where you've had that experience? See, that's two-thirds of the room. Yes. Very common. The challenge is to hang on to it. And masters are those who have had that same moment that we've all had, but they've hung on to it. They strung those moments together. Until now, they have so many moments like that strung together that it affects their whole ground of being. And they now come from that place rather than spend their life trying to get to that place. And that's the only difference.
Are you a master?
Clearly, you don't know me. No. I will acknowledge openly that I have a deep, deep understanding of these things. I also will acknowledge openly that I don't walk my talk as I would like. But I'm better than I was a few years ago when I didn't even know where I was trying to go. I didn't even have an understanding. I had no idea. I swear to God, I had no idea what was going on here. Who I am, what am I doing here? I was just walking around in like one person with a foot nailed to the floor. And in those days and times, I hurt a lot of people. And even after I began to understand, I hurt a lot of people. And I'm aware of that. So no, I'm not a master. But I'm willing to take your hand and walk with you there. You lead me and I'll lead you. And together we'll get there. Yes. Yes, go ahead. Yes, I hear you.
Do you think that your experience, your terrible experience of homelessness, etc., was necessary for you to be in the frame of mind to receive?
Yes, in my case, yes, because I'm a very stubborn person. In my case, I really do believe that life had to bring me to my knees and take everything from me. It took everything from me. And this is not an exaggeration. I had two pair of jeans, two or three shirts, a knapsack with a couple of trinkets, that's all I had. And I didn't even have a car. They stole my car. It was stolen off the streets of Portland. I even didn't even have a car. I was on foot with not all that I could carry, which was a tent, a nylon tent, which is not very heavy, and a knapsack and a couple of just nothing. But I think that God said to me, boy, you are a tough case. We're going to take it all away from you. the family, the wife, the children, the stuff, the career, the big highfalutin guy who's on the radio and thought he was hot stuff, everything. We're going to take it all away and bring you down to ground zero. Now, the good news is you don't have to go there. That's the good news. The bad news is you may go there, and you're headed there. I can see but just looking at you. But the rest of you, no. Just kidding. Okay, I'd like to do more questions, but I just realized, oh, my gosh, it's 5:30. We got to be out of here by 6, quickly. Everybody, get out your writing implements. If you had a question, you could ask God. Actually, I was serious. If you had one question you could ask God today, not who's going to win the lottery or, you know, anything, you know, silly, but really a fairly, you know, important question to you. Don't need to show your neighbor. Don't need to show anyone around. Just what would that question be? Write down the question now, please. Take 30 seconds and just write down the question. Good. It shouldn't take you much longer than that unless you're writing an encyclopedia. Does anyone need more time with that? Good. Now, please put your writing implements on the chair next to you, or if you can't do that, on the floor in front of you, so that your lap is totally clear. I'm going to invite you to become comfortable in your chair, in your body. Whatever that takes, that's good. Stretch a bit if you want to and become comfortable. Shift your weight around and feel good in the chair where you are right now. I'm going to invite you to close your eyes if it feels good to do so, and not if you don't want to. And I'm going to invite you now to be fully present right here, right now. Allow yourself to be fully present right here, right now. And to notice what it feels like to be right here, right now. Feel the bottoms of your feet. Focus on the bottoms of your feet. And just kind of send your mental focus to the bottom of your feet. And just notice what it feels like for your feet to be touching the floor. Just kind of notice that as you ground yourself in this moment right now. Good. Now feel how your torso feels, how your body feels sitting in the chair right now. Just take a little survey. Move with your mind's energy, with your mind's focus through your body. Just take a quick scan and feel what it feels like to be sitting in that chair right now. Good. Now, using your ears, listen to the sound of right now. Notice what it sounds like to be right here, right now. Good. And now smell the fragrance of this moment. Just allow yourself to breathe gently in and to focus on whatever it might smell like to you. The fragrances around you in this moment, right here, right now. Okay. So now all of you are right here, right now. And in this moment of now, I'm going to invite you to run a 60-second motion picture in your mind, a short 1-minute movie. And in this movie, I'm going to invite you to see on the movie screen of your mind all of the important events, the really significant events of your life, from the earliest days you can remember until this moment right now, going back to the earliest important memory and running a fast-forward movie to this moment right now. Allow yourself to see that movie right now. good. And now I'm going to invite you to notice something about those events, some of which were maybe good, what you call good, some of which may be what you call not so good. But whether they were good or not so good, those significant events, notice that none of them are happening right here, right now. That was then, and this is now. So notice the purity and the cleanliness, and if I could use the word, the perfection of this moment right here, right now. Regardless of all that has gone before. Here we are. And now I'm going to invite you to run a short movie in your mind's eye from this moment forward to the farthest day that you could imagine in your future, picturing all the things you would love to have happen. Maybe even some of the things you're afraid might happen. Who knows? But looking into your future and just letting yourself picture all the events that you would like to create. For sure, those events that you'd like to create in your life from this moment until that day in the far distant future. Let yourself do that movie right now. Good. Now, what I'd like you to notice is that as wonderful as many of those creations in the future might be, and as perfect as those pictures are, notice that none of those things are happening right here, right now, and that you really don't need them to happen in order for right here, right now, to be wonderful in every way. So give yourself permission to notice something extraordinary about this moment, this sliver in time, this now that you are experiencing. Notice how perfect it is, how safe, how secure, how joyful you can be right now if you simply look into the moment and see that nothing is needed, not a single thing is needed in this nanosecond for everything to be perfect. With you, right here, right now. Oh, it may not have been perfect yesterday, and you may have some worries even about tomorrow, but as we sit here right now, how perfect it is, and nothing more is needed than what is right here. And we say, thank you, God, quietly and inside of our minds. In the heart of our hearts, we say, thank you, God, thank you for the perfection of this moment, of this here, of this now. Thank you for the love that rains down upon us like so many billions of raindrops of love. Thank you for the love that showers upon us, the energy of which we can feel, dear God, in the perfection of this moment. And we allow ourselves now to feel that presence, to feel that perfection, to feel it even as if it were a billion different raindrops of God's love, of God's energy. You can even hold your hands out. I invite you now to hold your palms out in front of your body, not touching anything else. Don't let your hands rest on your knees or on your lap. Just put your hands out in midair. Try this experiment. And feeling the love of God and the perfection of this moment, holding your hands to the sky as if it were coming through the ceiling. Just feel the energy of God's love. Focus on your hands. Focus on your hands. And feel the energy. It's right in the air. Focus on your hands. And now allow yourself to bring your hands together. Don't touch them. Don't let them touch. Just bring them together, facing each other, with palms facing each other, as close as you can get them without touching. And feel the energy move from one hand to the other. Feel the energy between your hands. Feel it expand and contract, almost as if it were breathing in and breathing out. You can even make it expand and contract. Feel the energy between your hands. Play with it. Have some fun with it. Play with it. See how far apart you can spread your hands before you lose touch with the feeling. And when you lose touch with it, bring your hands back together and reconnect. And you'll feel that energy right between your hands. And as you feel that energy between your hands, like a ball of invisible light, say hello to your soul. You are holding the essence of who you are in the palm of your hand. Hello, God. Hello, soul. How nice to be in touch. And now allow yourself to just gently bring that energy into your heart. Just bring it into your chest and take it home inside of you. We say, thank you, God. We say, thank you, God, for this moment and this perfection. And now gently, without hardly a sound, in the smoothest action your body has ever taken, quietly and quickly, just simply pick up your pad and pencil or your pen and write down the answer to your question. Don't think, just write. Don't think, just write. Immediately, now, the first thing that comes to your mind. Don't think, just write. Good. Read the question and the answer will come. Don't deny the answer. You already know the answer. Just write it down. Good, I see some tears in the room. I see quite a few tears in the room. That's very natural, very normal, very normal. And now, if you're not finished with your writing, let yourself know that you may finish this answer whenever you wish, that you may make this connection again whenever you choose. so you can finish this answer in the quiet of your own private space, as it pleases you to do so. But for now, give yourself permission to return to this time and place in full consciousness and full awareness of this present moment. I'm going to ask you to look at something in the room, anything that pleases you, anything you agree with. Just look at something that is pretty or nice that you kind of like, and just take a look at that and say thank you to God for that being there. Good. Now look at something else, a second thing. Find something else, a second thing in the room that you agree with, and allow yourself to be fully present and to return in full consciousness to this time and place. Nice. And a third and final thing, a third and final thing. Pick something out, a lamp, a ceiling, an architectural design, anything, just so you can notice it. And notice the physicality of this time and place. Great. I can feel you're all back here in the room. You're all back here in this moment. Thank you for returning. Thank you for coming home, back here to now. There's no wrong way to do this exercise, to do this process. It does not always produce the same outcome for everyone. And some people do not have the outcome that others have. Please don't feel that you did something wrong or that somehow God doesn't communicate with you. In every human soul, there is a pathway to God, a pathway to the self, capital S, and it might be different from this. But for many people, just stopping for a moment once or twice a day, as we've done here, just being fully present and fully here is really all that it takes. And then you literally can ask a question and get answers of enormous clarity. I'm curious, just as a survey, how many of you felt some sort of energy between your hands? Raise your hand. Look around the room. Just look around the room. That's 90% of you. I'm curious, how many of you felt that you had some kind of communication or answer from a divine source of wisdom? Raise your hand. Hold your hands up. Look around the room. Good. Either something really remarkable happened here, or the room is filled with liars. This is how it happens with me. Do you know how remarkably simple this is to connect with that source of incredible wisdom? And do you know how seldom people do it? That's why the world is the way it is. If the whole world could see what happened here right now, I'm not kidding. If we could televise this to the whole world and invite all the people of the earth to do this twice a day, what did it take us, 12 minutes, 15 minutes? To do this twice a day and to connect with that source of divine love and divine wisdom within us and receive the guidance of the higher part of our own divine self, the world would change overnight. This is not, as they say, rocket science. We have about 10 minutes left. I'm wondering if there's anyone in the room who has something they'd like to say or share about this experience or the message they received. Might there be anyone? I don't want anyone to feel closed off or...
There was a question about, you know, masters, and I think that probably there are times in our lives when we are so much more than our everyday selves. I used to work with dying people, and there were definitely times when we needed to get to the meat of the matter. And I think that in at the end of people's lives, I don't know if I'm correct in this, I'm thinking their vibrational rates are climbing because they're going to a different place. And I think being close to those types of people, I would have to answer questions that I may not be able to answer at any other time in my life.
And you answered them, and you answered them brilliantly and fully, didn't you?
Absolutely.
That's
and
right.
I thought, you're not that smart. Where did that come from?
That's right. That is, yes, that is exactly what we're talking about here. That is exactly what we're talking about here. And I believe that all people have had that experience. And all I'm saying from this stage today is, what would happen if we called forth that experience, if you please, if I could use the phrase, on demand, rather than simply the circumstance threw us into that space? And if we found a way to do it on demand, what a difference it would make. Well, guess what? We just did it on demand right here. We did it on demand right here. It took us 12 minutes. And 90% of the people in the room had the experience. Is there anyone else who has something they'd like to share about the experience that they've just had?
It's more of a question, if that's okay. I guess it's probably a very common question, but how do you separate... There's a lot of voices in my head, not to sound crazy, but how do you separate the God in you from...
Is it life-affirming? What would happen if everyone did it?
Be a lot of fun sometimes.
No, I'm saying the measurement. When you hear a voice and it's telling you something, the measure is what I've just heard, life-affirming, life-supporting, and what would happen if everyone did it? Put those two yardsticks down next to what you've just heard, and you will know whether it came from the highest place of divine wisdom within you or from some confused and distorted source. Yes? Is there anyone else in the room who has something they'd like to share about the experience? I'm curious to know what your experience was of the moment and what happened. Yes, go ahead. Yes, sir, right here.
Well, my experience here was very much like my experience reading Book One of Conversations with God. It established a dialogue where the answers that came to me were self-affirming, that I knew that they were beyond me. And my mind tried to deny that, and I went back and I read some of the things that I journaled, and it was very clear to me that something beyond me had come through me with the information. And now, when that happens, I know and I trust what I'm being told.
Thank you. Thank you for that sharing. Is there a third or fourth person who would like to share back there? The lady right back there, and then we'll come over here. Yes.
Wow. I don't speak in public, but I just felt I had to share. I didn't even have a question. I couldn't come up with one. But when we started, I was really anxious, and we traveled here, my friend and I, from New York, and traveling makes me really anxious. And when we started to do it, I just started feeling very anxious, and you talked about this is a perfect moment, and all I kept thinking was, I'm just scared, and I am, and my obsessive thinking and all my disordered thoughts, they just, I deal with a lot of disordered thinking and a lot of problems, and they just kept popping up, and I was just so scared, and I couldn't get them to stop, and I'm like, this is anything but the perfect moment for me. And then my friend took my hand. I mean, we didn't even speak, and I think our eyes were closed, and she just knew I needed her. And then I heard it, and I didn't even ask God a question. I couldn't come up with one. And I just heard, you are safe. So it was just beautiful. So, yeah, I heard you are safe, and I just wanted to share that.
Good. Good. And very good. Yes, there was a lady here who had her hand up. Yes, yes. Yes, ma'am.
Hi. I've never been the kind of person that could meditate because I could never calm my mind down enough to do that. And the question I wrote to God was, why can't I always go into deep meditation to learn? Because I want to do it on impact or on the moment that I need to on demand. And I went to this place because I've always sensed the divine in all of us, that we have it. And I was so there. And my answer was, I can. And it was wonderful.
That's great. Thank you. Yes, sir. Would you raise your hand, sir? We'll do one more after this, then we'll conclude. Yes, sir.
For myself, it didn't really even take 12 minutes. I found that when the question came, it was almost already there before it was even asked. When the answer came, even though it seemed to take time in between, it was so connected to the question that they seemed simultaneous. And then I knew that it was me asking the question and me answering, and it was me as God all at the same time.
Thank you. All right, sir, with the microphone, there's one question left in the room. I'm not going to call on that person because I want them to be mad at you if they don't get... So you pick the last question. Raise your hand if you have... I mean, the last sharing. You pick the last sharing.
Well, there's two. We're going to go with it.
I went for a big question that I...
Would you talk right into the mic?
I went for a big question that I've been asking for years and never got an answer to, and it was, what's my purpose?
Would you talk right into the microphone?
My question was, what's my purpose for being here? And the answer I got was to show other people their divineness.
Wow. I'd like you all, thank you for that sharing. I'd like all of you to do yourself a favor, take what you wrote, take it home, spend a few dollars, $28, $36, it won't be a lot. Go to a frame shop, tell them, mat this and frame this. Doesn't have to be real expensive, but just nice, you know, $35 worth. Take it home, put it in some private place, maybe even your closet or near your bathing area where you're the only one, you know, who, and hang it on the wall. And let yourself see it every day. And let yourself know that this came to you and through you as a simple, rapid, and vivid demonstration of the presence of divine wisdom within you in every moment. This has been the fastest hour and a half of my life. I feel like I just stood up here. It's very, very rapid. And I'm sorry. I must tell you that I have to get somewhere at 6 o'clock, so I cannot sign books, which I normally do after an event, but there will be a book signing tomorrow at 3:30. If you're here for the weekend, I mean 3 o'clock, tomorrow at 3 o'clock, there will be a signing right outside the room where I am presenting at 3 o'clock tomorrow. And I need to go. Thank you so very much. God bless you.